I have been educated publicly, and in the UK, public school is not the same as the US, I believe. Public school is, so in the UK, state school is public school, which means it's run by the government and it's free. I attended private school, and I've also attended public school, which is the same as private school, but it's a slightly more old-fashioned term of using it, and I did also go to boarding school as well. Very, very English, very British, very things, very traditional institutions that I went to. As I mentioned in my video as well, that my parents, there was a lot of jobs and stuff, so I could go to really good get a really good education. And afterwards, I had a gap year and things, and then I went to university.
So, where you are now?
Yes, I'm at university now.
Do you want to say where, or you prefer not to?
I'd prefer not to be honest.
Somewhere good? I'm getting the feeling you're very smart.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Let's hope I don't disappoint that. It's somewhere in the north, so I'm just going to say that.
Okay, okay. And what are you studying? What are you reading?
I'm reading linguistics.
Aha. Do you speak Mandarin?
No. Okay, so basically I've taken some classes in Mandarin this year, took a short course, and it was kind of one of those intensive, you know, put all together, try and learn as much as you can in 1 year. It was very intense and a lot of work, but I did really, really enjoy it. So I'm able to have a limited conversation, but it's not my main conversation. Mandarin is actually my fourth language.
Wow.
So my second language is French, and then my third language is Spanish, and then Mandarin is actually my fourth language. So when I finally get to grips with, you know, Mandarin and everything, all the things, then that will be my fourth language, hopefully.
That's very impressive. Were you how old were you when you started studying Spanish and French?
I was about 11, so I was really lucky actually, because I got to where my mum worked, there actually happened to be a French family where she was working, so I had lessons with them and things a lot, just in their family home and stuff, and we actually became really good friends and things, family friends. And then as well, I was lucky because my school had a French exchange. And I got on really well with my exchange, and we ended up going, like, meeting up together many years after the exchange ended, things. And we're still really good friends now, and we still see each other and things. So I was really lucky with that. And then after I finished school, I went to get a job in France. So that helped as well. I also got the chance to do baccalaureate, which is the international, the European. They do it in the US as well.
They do, yes.
Yeah. So my teacher was French there as well. But that was a very different story. But and then Spanish. I started Spanish a bit later when I was about 13. But again, I was lucky because my school had a Spanish exchange and stuff. And they were really, you know, very much encouraging of learning other languages and promoting that. And, I mean, my parents were as well. I wasn't really good at anything else, so...
Well, I think those are two. That's very, being good at languages is plenty.
That was basically it. Yeah.
So, you took your gap year in France.
So the beginning of my gap year, I was working for 6 months, and I was just working sort of regular jobs and things, trying to get some money together and things, just sort of working several jobs and things. And then after that, I went to volunteer as a teacher in Fiji. Which was a really amazing experience, and I would definitely recommend it if anyone is wanting to travel with this company and things. And it was really interesting for me because I went to volunteer at a Muslim school, and that was a complete culture shock for me. And I was living with some Fiji's split between two cultures. There's the indigenous Fijians that have been there for hundreds of years, and there's also the Indian Fijians that actually the British brought over to work on the sugar plantations. And so there's two kind of cultures and two languages there, which there's a lot of conflict over that. But I was living with the Indian Fijians, and that was really eye-opening for me. And as well because I think it was the first time I'd been out of Western countries for a long time. And it's when I started to come across the questions from people asking about where I'm from and things, and I say I'm from England. And when my host family first saw me, they said, "Well, on the paper said you were Chinese." I said, "Yes, I am Chinese." They said, "So how long was the plane from China?" I said, "No, I didn't come from China. I came from England." And they said, oh, but you look Chinese. And I said, yeah, so I am Chinese. And they couldn't understand this sort of duality. And I constantly ran into people when I was in Fiji. They say, oh, where are you from? And I say, oh, I'm from England. Oh, but you look Chinese. Oh, yes, but I am Chinese. But you just said you were from England. Oh, yeah, it was quite hilarious. But yeah, it was. And I remember one specific incident where I got rejected to use my card because this woman said, we're not taking international cards today. It's only Australian and something else cards today. And I said, well, I've got an English card. It says here that you can take English cards. And she said, is that definitely English? And I said, yeah, it is. It's Co-op Bank. You know, it originates from the UK. And she said, oh, well, we don't take Chinese cards. I said, it's not a Chinese card, though. And she was really, I think she was looking at my face and she couldn't understand how I had an English card. And it was just a real, but to me, it was frustrating, obviously, because I was like, please let me use this card. I would like to buy this item. But yeah, it was interesting.
That must have been, you know, it is funny when you tell it in that people keep saying it's sort of like a comedy routine. Oh, but you said you're from England. No. On the other hand, I can imagine it must have been also difficult. And it's in when you were growing up in England, what was the culture like around Chinese adoption? I know in this country, the families with children from China chapters are very active, especially when kids are younger and we all drag our kids off to the Dragon Boat Festival and the lanterns and everything. And then you move into your teen years and there are more and more resources now, you know, sort of like what you're doing, adoptees for adoptees. But what's the culture like in Britain for Chinese adoptees? Is it the same kind of thing?
I would have to say no, not at all. I definitely think the US seems to be a lot more proactive from what I've seen about it. And obviously I'm just one person and my perception of being an adoptee is just shaped by my own experience because I grew up in the countryside. I grew up in areas where I was mostly the only person of colour. And especially in my schools, obviously I attended private schools. And typically the private schools I went to, I was one of about three people in colour, maybe, if not more. And as for adoptee stuff, when I was younger, yes, I was part of a bigger group that was sort of based around the London area, which is a lot further away from where I live. And we used to meet up kind of for Chinese New Year and sort of, I'd say, biannually. But as I got older, as I was about 8 or 9, I think that stuff was sort of, you know, people moved on and stuff, and I didn't really see a lot of them anymore. So I'd say that's when it sort of really stopped after that. And I still spoke, there were still some adoptees I spoke to, but there wasn't any kind of big group or anything, and we didn't talk about adoptee stuff, we just moved on and we were talking as friends. It wasn't central to that, and I think that's one of my main reasons for starting this is because I feel that, you know, in the UK and as well, I think that it's really important to talk about that. And I think that conversations about this, you know, do need to be discussed. There are adoptees in the UK and there are Chinese adoptees and other Asian adoptees and other transracial adoptees. And I think talking about this would really help. And I think that, I think for someone like me from my experiences growing up would really benefit from something to talk about and to essentially not that know that they're the only one, essentially. I think that, you know, it's difficult if you're limited with what you can do because you can't, I don't say to my parents, it's, you know, you can't really criticize parents or people because if there aren't resources around, they can't do anything. You know, it's not, you know, there's only so much you can do and things. There's only so much that a child is interested in. You know, when I was 6, I was interested in it vaguely, but, you know, for me when I was 6, other kids weren't Chinese. I didn't necessarily, I wasn't that interested. It was, yeah, okay, we do this occasionally, but it wasn't something I really set my heart on or something I really talked about a lot. But I guess now that I'm older, I do want to talk about it a lot more. And I don't know, I think it's more important, I think, really. And you know, in the UK as well, especially, as I've talked about in other videos and things, the idea in the sense of the British Asian community, I do find that it's really, from my perspective, I haven't really described it. I find it would be nice if we could bring that together and if we could have that togetherness in that, and if that there could be unity in that. And I think that would be really great, and that's what I'm trying to do at the moment, because I feel that there isn't that togetherness. There is, everyone's quite sort of separate on that, really. And if those things could come together, so if that could be there for adoptees as well, you know, the sort of community of people who have grown up in the West but are the same race as you, or they are the same background as you, as well as the community adoptees, if we could have two of those together, I think that'd be great. But obviously that's two working things, so see how it goes. I've always known that I look different. I think one thing of translation adoption, you can't hide it. It's apparent. People ask questions. It is a thing. It's something you know. I think for as long as I can remember, I've always known that I'm Chinese before anything else, but I've never thought about what that means or how that's different from my parents not being Chinese. It's something. And growing up, I think, I did feel different. I did feel out of place. And I think, that's normal for a child. And everyone goes through that sense of, I don't belong anywhere. Who am I? Blah, blah, blah. But I do think in some ways, adoption is a slightly different question of who am I? Because there are those gaps missing and there are those questions which aren't answered. And those things that, with biological children, obviously parents can say, well, this is where I come from and things, and this is how I carried you and things. And with adoption, there's not that conversation. You can't have that similarity. And I think that I noticed it a lot when I was a child, but obviously I was involved with those adoptee stuff, so it wasn't majors, but I still could talk about it with them. And obviously when I got older and I felt, going to drift more from that, and I went to different schools and I was in areas which, like I said, there weren't many people of colour. And I think I noticed people was kind of reactions towards Asian people, towards Chinese people, questions. People ask me a lot of questions, and they're really, honestly, they're not mean or anything, they're just curious. And it's those sort of things that I started noticing people ask me. As a child growing up, you just don't know how to put, that people are asking you these questions and people are thinking of you in a certain way because of a certain thing, but you don't know, you do vaguely know why, but you don't know how to articulate how that feels. You don't know how to think about how to talk about how, what that does to your emotional self, or what that does to your sense of identity or sense of self-esteem or sense of how people view people from a certain culture in a certain way.
What kind of questions would people ask you that would hit you, but you just didn't quite know what to do with?
There's quite a lot of common questions. I've got quite small feet. Do you bind your feet? I heard they still do that in China. It's amazing that I got actually congratulated by some of my teachers for my accent. I also got asked if I wanted to do a talk in front of the international students to talk about moving into English culture.
Wow. Was this in like high school, or was this at university? Yes. This was in high school.
No, it wasn't at university.
Oh, okay. Okay, it wasn't. This was in like high school.
Yes. And I've also, I was trying to think. I think people as well try to, there have been a lot of comments about how Asian I am. It's as if Asian is a scale. I don't know where this idea of that it's a scale, like some people are really Asian, some people are not Asian, even though it's something that you are or you're not. You're not really, really not, or you're really not not. It sounds like an odd thing to say, really. And people are like, oh yes, you're a failed Asian, or you're not really an Asian, or you're so Asian. Or people would say things to me like, I'm the only person at my secondary school not to take, I'm the only Asian person in my secondary school not to take further maths. And everyone found that really funny. And there was a lot of other things, as such as people would joke, "Oh, you dishonor your nation," or something. Or it's things like in reference to stereotypes about how Asian people are.
Right, you dishonor your nation by not being in advanced math, because everybody Chinese is in advanced math.
Of course they are. Yeah. You know, and it's things about not being what people's perception of Asian is. You know, I mean, like all people's ideas about, you know, old China with blinding feet and stuff, or everyone Asian is your brother or your mom. I mean, people would get on the bus, like two stops after I got off, and they'd be like, "Is that your mom?" And I'm like, "I don't know this woman. I'm not even from this city," you know? And, or things, I don't know, I'm just trying to think about other things. People would say...
Did you board at high school? So you were in a different community, or were you...
I've been ready for the last 2 years of school, so...
So did most of this happen where you were boarding, or did...
It happened... before I went away to boarding school. Happened more in my own community, and then in I went to school in the county next to me. It wasn't the same county. It happened in that one a lot. it was really in my own area.
See, I was like hoping for your sake that this had been like two isolated years when you were off at some boarding school somewhere. I was hoping it wasn't in the community in which you lived, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it was that one. And I always remember this. Trying to think some other ones.
I gotta tell you, those are doozies. I mean, yeah. The binding feet was that like a joke? Did people not?
No. Several people have asked me about binding feet. Several people have said, "Is it because your feet were bound, or is that it's not?" It's genuinely several people have asked me that, and it's things about my hair, or people have asked me if I was born with double eyelids, and I know that's a very uncommon thing. People have asked me if I've had surgery for that, as it's pretty common in Asia, and other things about my appearance. You know, about not being a stereotypical this or that, or about eating rice or eating rice all the time or something, or here's a good one. You don't speak your own language. What an insult. You should do. I think that's the problem that adoptees face often, is perceptions of how they should be, and that's why they feel personally attacked or personally kind of affronted by this, is because some people have ideas of how they should be. And I've had a lot of people say to me that I should speak Chinese, and it's bad that I haven't. And, you know, when I've come across this, it's something that I've had to explain to people, that I haven't grown up speaking Chinese because my parents are English. You know, I didn't have the access to that. There were some Chinese classes that I did join, but then they stopped in the local community. And then I joined another school, and they did start out having Chinese classes, but as soon as I joined, the Chinese teacher left. So I just never had the opportunity before going to university to really learn Chinese. And some people haven't really understood this idea that I haven't had the opportunity to learn it. And it's not something I come across, and it wasn't something I was interested in before. And there are lots of people in England who are British-born Chinese who don't speak Chinese. And I don't think that they should be expected to, that it's a bad thing if they don't, you know, because many people in the UK are from Irish heritage or Italian heritage, and, you know, the same thing applies to them. And I think that the question about language is often one that adoptees get and stuff and things, and it's the thing that separates you from, you know, your culture and stuff. But I think that expectation isn't positive, isn't helping adoptees to move forward. And it's a personal choice if you want to learn it or not. And if you, you know, I did want to learn it later on, you know, that's what I'm doing now and things. But when I was younger, when I was 6 or 7, I wasn't that interested. And, you know, there wasn't a local Chinese school for me to, you know, sometimes there's weekend classes. There wasn't that around. There just wasn't available, you know, so I had nothing to go to. And then when I got older, there were some things, but, you know, they weren't, I wasn't super, super interested as I am now. So
it sounds like when people ask you this question, what's difficult about it is that rather than a question, it feels like a judgment.
I'd say that sometimes it's perceptions of how people ought to be, and rather than, sometimes it can come across that way, rather than just being curious and things, and but sometimes there's also the comments about, so for example, I've had comments in the past about, you know, you're a loud person, but that transforms into you're a loud Asian person. Mm. And I don't understand why there's the need to put that prefix in there as well, and to put that in as well. So I've never met a loud Asian person like you, rather than I've just never met a loud person like you, and it has to be an I've never met a loud Asian person like you. Or I've never met like a something Asian person like you. I don't really know how to respond to those, because I don't really know what you can say. You can't say anything apart from, okay, yay, I am the first.
Do you ever, like, I mean, I'm just, I'm thinking about myself, and I just have a short fuse for dumbness, and I can be very undiplomatic, not my greatest quality. On the other hand, there are times when I'm sort of glad I'm that way. And I just wonder, it's just, do you ever just want to turn around and just say, just let the person have it? I mean, how do you restrain yourself from just getting really mad? Or do you? Maybe you don't.
Right. No, I have a lot of really nice friends that I just tell them about afterwards. Thank you, lovely friends. But I think it is difficult, and you know, people can back out, you know, lash out and stuff. I think that's when obviously comments like, "Oh, this really aggressive Asian person," you know, and it's things like that, and those comments can come up as well. And obviously, that doesn't help the situation. The two kind of forces are against each other on that. And I think, yeah, I've had times where I've been really frustrated and really angry with this and the situation, and I've been annoyed at some of the comments I've gotten that I've always wanted to turn around and kind of give them this long spiel about, by the way, your perception of me as this, this and this is wrong because this is this. But really, that's not going to help anybody, is it? It's not going to help anybody if I come back and go with anger about it. It's really about, you know, as annoying as it is talking about it, you know, calmly and saying, oh, I'm not XYZ. I remember now, one of them was when I told some people at university that I was taking the Chinese beginners course, some people said, well, that's an easy choice for you, just cutting out. And, you know, everyone said, oh, well, that's going to be no hardship for you. And I said, well, actually, I just speak Chinese and things. And it's, you know, they assumed, and okay, you can see why they did that and things. But it was, I guess it's a case of talking to other people. And then that way you can kind of not feel angry about it on your own later, because if you just sort of silently take it and don't say anything at all, then you'll just, well, me personally, I know that I would go back to my room and just be really annoyed for a long time. Whereas if you just calmly explain to the person, say, hey, look, by the way, I'm adopted, I don't speak Chinese, this is actually a really interesting culture exploration for me, it is not me just taking the subject for the easy way out, then that really helps the other person and yourself more, but I agree, it is easy to just lash out sometimes, and there's a lot of good music out there and everything, so
it sounds like sometimes, though, if you take the opportunity to really in effect educate the person, although it's probably no fun walking through the world feeling like you're on, to some extent, you've been assigned this mission to educate people that you didn't ask for, and okay, but you've got it. But it sounds like you do that, and it can, maybe tell me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it can lead to some good conversations, and maybe you've helped people understand something that they didn't understand before. And it seems to me that's what you're doing with your videos and with your the sort of media that you're putting out there. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I thought it was interesting that you were saying you weren't really able to articulate to your parents some of how isolating and how unpleasant some of this stuff was, but that you're sort of, you can send that message out into the universe with these videos. So how did you decide to start doing this? And have your parents seen your videos? What do they think?
I was really, really starting to become very sad with my feelings about being adopted. And I was at a point in my life where I felt very isolated anyway. And I was really at a loss sort of with myself about how to feel about it. And I didn't really have anyone to talk to about it. And I'd watched a video on the Korean adoptee Dan, aka Dan. I don't know if you've seen his video. Mm-hmm. And this whole world of talking about it openly and stuff just blew over my mind. And I thought, whoa, look at that guy. Oh, my goodness. And I thought about how he found his birth parents. And I actually contacted him, and he wrote back to me. He was so lovely. Thank you, Dan, aka Dan. Anyway, and, you know, that happened. And then I didn't think about it again for another year. But it was just slowly sort of deteriorating away to my mind. And it really got to the point where I wanted to talk about it a lot of people, but I didn't want to. Obviously, your friends, you do want to talk about things that are affecting you at the moment, but you don't want it to become obsessive, or you don't want to become overrun, or you don't want to become that person that's dragging the conversation down and things and stuff. And I thought, well, I need to have a way to make this positive. And I was talking to my parents about it, and they could see that I was really feeling down about it. And I was really kind of felt this, I almost felt heavy. It felt like a heavy weight. It felt that, like you said, that, you know, I'd been assigned this mission to, you know, go through my life and do these things, but I didn't feel like I'd chosen it. I didn't feel like it was necessarily fair that I had to deal with this. And, you know, like I said, with adoption, you know, two of the major choices of my life weren't made by me, and I'd felt really almost, you know, cursed by this and this and things. But, you know, really after that, you know, obviously I joined the adoption group online and things, and I started looking out there in the media and what there was more and stuff, and I realized that it wasn't there as much as I wanted it to be. And, you know, and things with your blog and stuff are really great. And some other people I've seen recently as well, The Adopted Life, and then Ben Dean as well, and some other people online who are talking about it more. And I thought, wow, this is great. And then I was talking about it with my parents, and I was saying, you know, I do feel that I have missed out on some of the culture aspects, and I do feel very odd about it, and I do feel conflicted about my feelings about this. And things, and my mum said, as mum says, that you know, okay, blah 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 blah, we understand things, and blah blah blah, we don't want you, you know, we want to make this right for you, and we want this to be okay for you. And I said, yeah, yeah, blah 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 blah, you know, stuff. And then we talked about it, and mum was saying, well, you know, why don't you make the video? Why don't you do that? You know, why don't you put that out there? Why don't you try and help other people? You be the one. And I was like, oh, I don't know, mom, blah blah blah, you know, things, and typical things people say. And really, honestly, I think it was that point that I really decided to do it, because, you know, she was right. I think these things do need to be talked about, and, you know, I've got 100% personal experience of this and things. And, you know, obviously everyone has fears about putting things outline and thinking who's gonna see it. It's gonna be there forever, pretty much. You know, it's not going to, can't take things back. And, you know, I thought, who am I to say this? You know, who am I? I'm not somebody famous, I'm not somebody things that, but, you know, I have a story that's very similar to many thousands of people out there, you know, thousands and other people, and people who aren't adopted as well have similar experiences of similar feelings. You know, I have friends that weren't adopted but have similar feelings about their family, or people from different cultures and things, or people from mixed backgrounds. Just all backgrounds can relate in some way, I believe. And, you know, talking to my parents about it and stuff, about my feelings, about feeling kind of out of place and isolated, and I felt that, you know, growing up, it had been quite difficult without that in the media, and without that, you know, without that presence, without that open right to discuss. So then I guess I just decided to do it, and had to swallow my own pride and things, and on the, you know, about whether it was good enough or whether it was this or that, because, you know, it's really important to do, and I think it's something that I care a lot about. And I think, I mean, then you're going to be really excited for it to do it and things. And and then I just started doing it. I didn't really know what I was doing. I still had my old camera, and then I think I left my phone next to the camera, so there was a lot of beeping and like muffled noises. But it's all okay now. And then actually even straight away I received some positive feedback from some people, some adoptees, and I thought, well, you know, this is what I've got to do. You know, this is what I've got to continue doing and continue trying to help out and trying to make a difference, really. And, you know, even if just one person sees it and if just one person has a good experience from it and one person says, you know, I watched this video and I can totally relate, that's being in the video, thank you for putting out, then it's all good, isn't it? Then it's all, yay. You know, even if it was just one person, then it's important to that one person. And you know, there are lots of individuals, like I said, who have been affected by this, and even if I only reach five of them, but I reach them in a profound way, then that's great, you know?